It's lovely to see you all again. And I was reflecting on being with you in December and how that seems like halcyon days in a bygone era. And life has radically changed. Just the kind of idea of standing in a circle holding hands is very different now. And I don't know about you, but when I watch movies and I see everybody touching everybody and touching everything, it's like, ah, you know, it just seems like another time. And I mean, there was a lot wrong too. And obviously there are some terrific changes that are also happening, but we're being asked to adapt awfully quickly. And we are, but it's sort of shocking. You know, we already had a challenging administration. Now we have a pandemic. Then the Asian giant hornet bees arrived. And, you know, and now the ongoing horrific crimes perpetuated by law enforcement against people of color. So deeply troubling. I read a quote of Martin Luther King. He said, "A riot is the language of the unheard." And another African proverb that I really love is, "A child not embraced by the village will burn it down to feel its warmth." So when Sally called me and told me how she was feeling, it echoed, you know, and that she was troubled by how she was feeling as a result of, you know, sheltering in place and all the stuff that we're being asked to do. And it was really reflecting what a lot of my clients are saying, what my colleagues are saying, what friends are saying, how I'm feeling, you know, just in case anybody's under the illusion that I got my act together and got it all worked out and then became a therapist. No, it's on-the-job training that's going on here. And I'm feeling, you know, as we all are, a lot of increased anxiety and depression. The executive director of NAMI, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, said that we're seeing a global experience of anxiety. And in my own practice, when I'm working with young people in, you know, their 20s, that's just par for the course. That the first thing just about that they come in talking about is anxiety. And now everybody's talking about anxiety and depression. And it's really hard because when you can't figure out what's going to happen next, and you don't, even though it's a bit of an illusion that we thought we knew what was going to happen next, it's deeply disturbing. People are feeling deep grief. If you're remotely awake, as Ram Dass says, once you wake up, you can't go back to sleep. You can't not feel what's going on in the country, in the world, that kind of is a conversation that seems relevant to COVID all the time, how it affects this, how it affects that. And now what's going on in the streets, and how do we respond to that? And how do we get better, particularly as white people, at being, you know, more than just not racist, but anti-racist, and really taking a stand for communities of color where the laws need to change, policy needs to change. There's so much that needs to change. And then, so along with the psychological and emotional challenges of just feeling isolation, loneliness. A lot of people are living alone. Somebody, I'm sorry, I don't know who it was, said, you know, they're, you know, it's Facebook is how they're staying connected. And thank goodness for the technology that we have. I can't even imagine what it would be like if we didn't have all these ways to connect. And I know a lot of people are also getting pretty zoomed out. You know, more people are keeping their cameras off or just not wanting to do it. And there's actually a great article out there about why Zoom is terrible. It's because we, while it's great, and thank you, Zoom and everything, our brain is constantly trying to kind of find the missing bits of data because there's a slight distortion, there's pixelation, there's delay or whatever. And in facial expressions, the brain's constantly looking for information to figure out what you're saying and feeling because our mirror neurons are kind of, you know, it's dependent on that. And a lot of that gets lost on a screen. And So that's trying on the brain. If anybody's having to spend a lot of time on Zoom for work, if you feel absolutely exhausted at the end of the day, that's why. And, you know, the missing parts of that we don't have access to now, that we rely on so much to kind of self-soothe, the healthy ways of self-soothing is connecting, getting together with our friends and family, going to church together, going to school together, seeing your colleagues at work, all of these things. Touch, hugging, all these things that we do to cope with being a human in the world. And we don't have access to those. And unfortunately, we have access to some of the not so healthy ways. And it seems there's quite a bit of overdrinking going on out there. The latest statistic I heard was that alcohol sales are up by 93%. There's a lot of Zoom drinking and local neighborhood cocktail parties happening, you know, and this sort of thing. And now that we're at phase two, when I was down at the protest yesterday in Bellingham, which drew, they're saying, between 6,000 and 7,000 people. It was packed. Everybody was masked. It was really, really, it was incredibly peaceful. Lots of kids, lots of dogs, lots of strollers, lots of signs, people being sensible about how they were spreading out, and absolutely no police presence, which I found interesting. I didn't see, which is unusual for a march. When I go to marches in Bellingham, there's always, you know, local cops hanging around. Didn't see any yesterday. Wonderful speakers, an outpouring of support. And I do see terrific hope in that, of that we are kind of stepping out in a new way. And I think the trick is that we stay committed to that, that it doesn't blow over to the next, you know, in a couple of weeks or to the next thing that we have to turn our attention to. So a new survey from the Kaiser Family Foundation just released, stating that 45% of adults, 53% women, 37% men, say the pandemic has affected their mental health significantly, and 19% say that it's had a major impact. Andrew Cuomo, now there's a leader, right, has established a mental health hotline with 6,000 volunteers to address the kind of ongoing, frankly, mental health tsunami that's coming and, you know, is still in the shadows, but it was kind of there before the pandemic, honestly. You know, we haven't had nearly enough resources for all of these things. And so with what's going on now, obviously the demand is going to be very high. You know, this is really hard on the nervous system. None of us are probably doing an hour and a half of yoga a day or meditating as much as we should or exercise as much as we should. But hopefully one of the things that we are doing is getting outside. I find for myself, if I can tune into the beauty, I've become a bit of a nutball about hummingbird feeders, and I highly recommend them to anybody who doesn't have one. Because when you stare at a hummingbird, which, by the way, their wings beat 50 times a second and their hearts beat 1,200 times a minute. I mean, that's ridiculous. And you watch them, it's hard to think about the pandemic or everything else that's going on because you're so focused on the miracle of a hummingbird. So if you don't have a hummingbird feeder, that's part of your treatment plan. Get one and hang it close and get a little bit obsessed. So where's my watch, Mildred?
It's 11:15.
It's 11:15. Okay. Will you help me stay on track?
Mm-hmm. When do you want
to end? In about 10 minutes. So what else? Playing music. For any musicians, if you can't get together with other musicians, I'm lucky I'm in a quarantine bubble with Manajat, who I call Mildred, if you're confused. She calls me Mildred too, but that's another story. You know, playing music by yourself, playing music, singing along, these are the things that our soul needs, because us, you know, we're so deeply distressed. I mean, I don't honestly think from a spiritual point of view that planet Earth is really our natural habitat. You know, I think it's very difficult being separated from the source of it all, or as I like to call it, the source of pure love and all creation, and that we are all one. We are all one. If the pandemic hasn't proved that we're all connected, you know, it's kind of showed us, right? It's like, yeah, you're really connected. Let me show you how. And when we're separated from the source, it's troubling. And I think we are prone to forget. Islam and Sufism very much relies and you know, the mantra is to remember what is true, to remember what we believe in, to have faith that life always presents really difficult times. I grew up in the aftermath of the Second World War, and both my parents fought in the Second World War. And what horrific times and horrific stories I heard about that, and we got through it. And here we are again, going through a horrific time, but coming back to us all being connected to pure love and the source of it all, and that you know, we all have that spark of original purity in our hearts, that when we connect on this level, whether it's on screens or across the street or at a protest or just smiling in a shop, we remember that. And it's, you know, I can be a bit of a news junkie, and I'm really trying to monitor that as to whether that's going to enhance my day. How connected do I need to be? How often do I need to check into what's happening? And how often do I need to have conversations with people where we make a commitment? You know, we're just not going to talk about it for a couple of hours. It's surprising how difficult that is to do, because COVID affects so many things, but can we focus on the beauty? Can we focus on love, harmony, and beauty, and remember how awesome we are, remember what we are capable of, and remember that we've had experiences in our life of feeling deeply connected, and they're brief, and when afterwards, sometimes I think, I know I do, question, was that real, you know? But it was. And my heart gets bigger when I focus on that and connect with the people I love. And yes, I'm just looking at my notes because I don't want to forget anything. There was so much that I wanted to say, and then it was like, yeah, that's too much, Pip. There's always so much that you want to say. Yes. Allow yourself at least a couple of days a week where you don't get anything done. And it's fine. It's just like, you're going to feel shitty. You're going to feel just, you know, just down and not energetic and not motivated. And I don't know about you, but I haven't cleaned out any closets or any drawers. And that's okay. And how much of a voice in your head is the inner critic getting these days, along the lines of somehow you're not doing enough or being enough or whatever the not enough voice is? And how do we challenge that voice? And that's, again, getting back to getting outside, connecting with the beauty, connecting with the good things that are happening, that people are doing, the movements that are gaining momentum, the money that's getting donated, the outrage, that we can connect with that and the positivity of that. And also, you know, the good old cognitive behavioral therapy recommendation of not believing your thoughts. You know, some of them, but not all of them. It's remarkable how many thoughts that we have that we absolutely should not believe. The feelings are, you can't do anything about the feelings. The feelings are going to come in. Sometimes we can identify them, sometimes we can't. But then we create thoughts out of that, and often we just kind of really go along with those thoughts, and so many of them just aren't true. And I think, considering the diversity of humanity, it's remarkable how many similar thoughts we have, particularly the negative ones, that we all share. They're all the same. And so that's a bit odd, isn't it? Because we're all so different, and yet why are we all having the same thoughts? They're just thoughts. They're like clouds passing in the sky. It's like, oh, that's a thought, but is it true? You know, many of them aren't. Never has one day at a time been more of a mantra than now. When we can't predict the future, and we couldn't really anyway, but we had an idea that we could. It's alarming and overwhelming, and it's like, back today. What do I have to do today? My mother used to say, ask God, expect results. Ken, I loved what you said. When you said, if there is a God, I remember Garrison Keillor saying he starts all of his prayers to whom it may concern. But my mom said, ask God, expect results, which sounded a bit demanding for a very proper English woman. But I have noticed, I actually do ask my mom. She's my kind of influence on the other side of the veil, where I feel I have an in. I feel like I know somebody over there because I think God's a bit busy probably. And she helps me out a lot. And then I notice, oh, that thing that I asked for happened. And the thing that I love about prayer too is that it forces us to figure out what we really want. And, you know, even if there isn't a God, maybe it's helpful to figure out what you really want anyway, even if it's just going out into the void and not going anywhere. So we're right in the midst of the fire. I often say to my clients who are getting newly sober and dealing with all the craziness, it's so much easier when we see the benefit of everything we've learned from a really challenging situation. But the fire, you know, we're walking away and the fire is in the rearview mirror, and that's not happening yet. We're standing in the middle of the fire and it's burning and it's painful and we're feeling it and it's really difficult. And so I think it's really important we all give ourselves a little bit of room to fail, to not be productive, to not feel great, to feel the grief. You know, if any of you have gone through socially distanced dying yet, it sucks. My heart is with you. I have. It's just terrible. But we're missing out on births and graduations and marriages and deaths and all these rites of passage that have such meaning for us, that feed us, that are our medicine. So I truly, I guess fundamentally I'm an optimist. I know we're going to get through this because humans do, and we will be better for it. And I'll finish with this quote by Rabbi Tarfon, who said, do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Do justly now. Love mercy now. Walk humbly now. You are not obligated to complete the work, but neither are you free to abandon it. Thanks very much, guys. It's great to see you all again. And I'll hand it back to you, Annalise.
Thank you so much for your message. I think we all were able to connect in our own personal ways to everything that you said. So I thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Closing. As you prepare to leave this sacred space, pack away a piece of this fellowship in your heart. Wrap it carefully, like a precious gem. Carry it with you through the joys and sorrows of your days. Let its gentle glow strengthen you, warm you, remind you of all that is good and true, until we gather here again in this space of love. Please join me, remind you of all that is good and true.